lovely Thursday. Nice to see many of your faces again. Again, this is Emily Cooper. I'm the Chief Housing Officer at the Executive Office of Elder Affairs, and thank you for joining us. I think we're going to jump right in, actually, and talk a little bit about technology. I'm sure you all Zoom experts by now, but since I know that there have been glitches recently, I am going to turn this over to Sarah from Leading Age. First, I want to thank Leading Age Massachusetts for supporting the technology for all these calls and really handling all this beautifully. I'm going to have Sarah just talk a little bit about the technology, how to ask questions, and things like that. So take it away, Sarah.
All right. Thank you, Emily. Hi, everybody. So just as a refresher, the default for this call is for everybody to be muted. So if you'd like to add a question or a comment at any point, you'll need to unmute yourself. For those on a computer, that will mean pressing the microphone button on the bottom left-hand corner of your Zoom screen. For those on the phone, you'll press star 6. The toolbar at the bottom of your screen, if you're on your computer, will also bring up a chat box, which can be used to add questions. You'll also see a participants button, which will bring up the ability to raise your hand. For those on the phone, if you'd like to raise your hand to indicate that you have a question or comment, you can press star 9. If at any point during this call you have trouble with your audio, we suggest calling in via a phone line. That information is in the chat box right now, but you can also feel free to send me an email at slacasse@leadingagema.org. You can also feel free to send me any questions that you have if you'd like them to be brought up during the call.
Great, thanks so much, Sarah. And I think some people are still entering the waiting room. I'm just gonna take a moment and to let, this is a partnership between Executive Office of Elder Affairs, Department of Housing and Community Development, Mass Housing and CDAC. So I always like to let the folks from our partner state housing agencies say hello. Sarah Barkin from CDAC, do you want to say hi?
Sure, thank you, Emily. This is my second meeting with Emily today, so I'm having a great day already. I just want to thank all of you for taking the time to be here. We've just had consistently such excellent participation, and I know all of you are on the front lines working incredibly hard to keep our vulnerable elders safe and healthy. And we really greatly appreciate that. And I know I'm getting a lot out of these calls. I hope you are as well. And I'm looking forward to hearing the presentations today.
Thanks so much, Sarah. And Dave Ng from Mass Housing.
Thanks, Emily. Just as we say every week, thank you all for the work that you do every day for the residents of the Commonwealth. And please always feel free to reach out to any of us if we can provide you with any information or assistance. Please don't hesitate to reach out. Thanks.
And Amy Stightley from the Department of Housing and Community Development.
Hi, everyone. Just echoing the thank you remarks to everyone, Elder Affairs, Leading Age, participants, presenters. Very excited for this topic today about isolation and mental health, so often overlooked. And thank you, Emily, for emceeing, hosting, moderating.
I do feel that you're welcome, but I do feel I'm going to have a second career as, you know, Ellen DeGeneres or Sally Jesse Raphael or something along those lines. So I think we also have had the pleasure of HUD being on the call every once in a while. So we're really trying as a concerted effort to come together to support you all as you are on the front lines of working with older adults through this pandemic. We recognized early that senior affordable housing was going to be an area that this pandemic was going to infiltrate and impact. And we wanted to support you in whatever ways we could. So we have developed a listserv. We have over 300 and some odd people on the listserv right now where we share resources. We hear from you all. We put information out there ranging from guidance that goes out to from state or local agencies to here's the best way to a video on how to make a face covering out of a t-shirt. We also have a dedicated email address, seniorhousingcovid19@mass.gov. You are welcome to email that. Email us questions, suggestions, thoughts. If you have cases in your senior housing and you positive cases and you want to share that with us, it helps us. You don't have to give us identifiable information, but it helps us know where there are clusters and figure out and advocate on your behalf for resources. We also have these weekly calls. They have been recorded and they are posted online on the Leading Age Massachusetts website. Past topics have been nutrition and community health centers and epidemiology and the contact tracing collaborative. So we've been excited to continue to have these calls. If you see in the chat room, my lovely people behind the scenes are posting the links to the recordings and things like that. Before we just get started, I want to just pause for 1 second to say we are evaluating whether or not these calls and the topics and the schedule for them is useful. And we sent out a survey, I think, last week to folks to sort of ask your opinions of them to the listserv. We didn't get a huge response. The responses that we did get are leaning towards sort of making this an every other week occurrence. We're going to ask you guys to just, if you haven't already, we'll send out the survey again, and we've actually put the survey link in the chat room. If you could take a moment to just let us, I think it's 3 questions, just let us know if what topics might be of interest to you. And I think we're just trying to evaluate the scheduling. Is it too much to ask people to come on a weekly basis? Should we go back to every other week? Okay, so we're going to launch in right now. It's a great topic. We're talking about loneliness. We're talking about social isolation, which are clearly huge issues. Were huge issues before and even huger now. Our first speaker we're honored to have with us, and we're very lucky, is Janet Sekel-Tirati, who is with Friendship Works. And Friendship Works is located in Boston and offers an array of programs that are aimed at reducing isolation and providing friendly supports to older adults. And we're going to hear about what Friendship Works provides and then sort of how they've pivoted or adapted in the COVID-19 epidemic. So Janet, I'm going to turn it over to you. Oh, but you're muted, Janet. You get to have to unmute first. Let's see. Oh.
There you
go.
I think you can hear me now. Give me like a 3-minute mark when you want me to end so I don't keep going on, whatever. And I also welcome questions at the end. So I am really, really happy to be speaking to all of you who are on this call today, because you're the people on the front line and you're dealing with a lot of older adults who we visit or who we want to know about because they may be isolated and you might be the ones to identify them. And we are Friendship Works' enduring mission for 36 years has been to reduce social isolation, improve quality of life, and maintain the dignity of older adults in the greater Boston area. So this is an issue, the issue that everybody today is dealing with is something we have been focused on for many, many years. And unfortunately, you know, it's really become a prevalent issue for so many more. So people are having a growing sensitivity to this issue. And I want to say that maybe the one of the few silver linings that will come out of this is that maybe some older adults who really are lonely and isolated but feel a stigma to say that may recognize that, wow, everybody's feeling that, so it might be okay. So people who were isolated before COVID-19 or people who became isolated during this time might feel more comfortable reaching out and saying, I'd like a friend, I'd like some new connection. I'm not too old to reconnect and to share my life with somebody else. And that's what we're there for, as are some other agencies. And I know that many different organizations are now pitching in and community groups. Friendship Works has been doing that and have systems in place to support those who are in our catchment area. So our greater vision is to end elder isolation and create connection. And just to say, we were originally funded actually by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation in 1984, which is a medical foundation, but who was really thought outside of the box. Their president at that time, recognizing that people who were aging in place alone did not fare as well as those who aged in place near their family and friends, and that the younger population was getting more mobile in the 70s and 80s, and people were starting to, the children, you know, were moving for jobs or to find themselves or so forth, or having to or wanting to, but that their parents and grandparents were staying in place, and then they didn't have a way to get to the doctor's appointment, or nobody saw them every week to see, oh, there's no food in the refrigerator, or, well, you know, mom looked really good last week, but this week she doesn't look so good. So that continuity of someone who really cares about you and is aware of your physical and mental and spiritual well-being, to have that constant weekly connection is really important, where you see the changes that you might, other people may not otherwise see. So our whole focus is to match volunteers, people of all ages and background, from 18 to however, you know, our volunteers are up through the 90s, with an older adult who doesn't have a lot of friends or family support, so who doesn't get to see them regularly, some who the volunteer may be the only social contact, others where there may be a family member coming in once a week, but somebody still needs a friend to be there. So we're matchmakers. We identify through you, you are the people, housing folks and human service people and medical people, the ones who identify and usually refer people to Friendship Works for, and have already talked to the elder. Would you like a new friend? They tell them about us. Would you like us to tell you about it? We'll take the referral. We'll then visit the elder ourselves. We'll find out what they're interested in. Do they love playing chess? Do they like talking about science? Do they like doing art? Do they just want to sit and watch television with somebody, or have a meal, or go out to a restaurant because they love going out, but they have no one to go out with? So we really, everything we do is very personalized. We recruit the volunteers then. We have over 400 volunteers who are recruited, trained, Corey checks, reference checked, and then we match them up, like matchmakers, like Fiddler on the Roof, but for friendship, not for married. Initially we were called Match Up Interfaith Volunteers. We are now Friendship Works. We changed our name because Match.com, people started, came into being after MatchUp was, and people started thinking we were a dating service. We are not, but we are a friendship service to create friendships. So again, we take into account who the volunteer is, what their likes and dislikes are. If they're allergic to a cat and the elder is a cat, we can't match them, where they live, and you know, all sorts of things. So I can tell you more about our friendly visiting program, which is probably the most important piece for those of you on the call today, as well as our medical escort program. Our medical escort program is not a transportation program. It is, we have volunteers who will go with someone to a medical appointment and stay with them, even go into an appointment with them if requested, and then make sure the person goes home, stopping at the pharmacy on the way. So it's really a way for people who have emotional or physical reasons why they don't go to their doctor's appointments, that we will have somebody go with them. It turns into a friendly visit along the way, hopefully reducing anxiety, preparing them for their appointments so they can actually hear what the doctor is saying, and to make sure that they get home safely. And then we have our friendly helping program, which really is the one-time short-term assistance, those things that those of us who are able-bodied take for granted, whether it's visiting a spouse in a nursing home, going to the cemetery on the anniversary of a loved one's death, helping to read a form for someone who's visually impaired or understanding that, cleaning out a closet where you can't get down on the floor and you want to clean it up, and somebody could come in once or twice and help you do that, throw away things, put it in places where you can reach it, anything you can imagine of that sort. And then we have things that we do in elder housing. So in buildings such as yours, we have a Music Works program that we develop, bringing the interaction of music, not music performance, but we have instruments and so forth that we play, we sing together, and I can tell you more about that, but I'm aware of the time, so I'm not going to go into depth into any of these programs right now. Our pet visitation program called Pet Pals is our outreach to assisted living and nursing home residents, which I don't know if any of you are on the call from there or not, and that's our outreach there. All of our programs are in Spanish and English. Our catchment area is all of Boston, wherever the mayor's mayor, the mayor, all of Brookline. 2 years ago, we our friendly visiting program was requested to come into the city of Newton, and we now are doing friendly visiting Newton. And in July, we will be adding our friendly visiting program to Cambridge and Somerville, and working with Cambridge Somerville Elder Services. So that's our catchment area. And I know some of you are not in that catchment area. If you are, we can take referrals from you. And some of the elders in your buildings may want to volunteer. Maybe they want to be a telephone pal, or they might want a visit and, you know, a phone call in this day of COVID. really our focus is in home, face to face, hold your hand while you're watching TV, you know, kind of being a friend in somebody's home, going out to a restaurant or a museum with somebody if people are mobile, walking with somebody for people who don't walk, and being that emotional and physical support. Our focus is to bring connection and friendship into the lives of people, making sure that they know that they're not alone, that they're not too old to have a new friend, that they have wisdom to share, and that people want to be with them. So it's called Friendship Works, because friendship is a two-way street. And also for tasks of life, that we are always interdependent, as we all know, we're not independent people. And so sometimes you need to give and sometimes you need to be the one who receives. And that's the way that we look at it. We also want to bring joy into people's homes. And that's where the Pep Pals and our Relaxing Through the Arts and our Music Works is about. All of our programs are free to any elder. The direct service is all done by volunteers who are matched and trained and queried, as I said, and they're all personalized. So we really take into account, we're not just matching a volunteer with an elder, we're really taking into account into who the person is. During the impact of COVID, obviously, like everybody else, we're not doing the in-person, and I don't know how long that's going to be, and that is really difficult for us because it's such a strong belief in proximity is, you know, a lot, and seeing what's going on in the apartment and seeing somebody, but everything we've pivoted to phone. All of our friendly visiting, you know, was being done by phone. We've checked with, we've also expanded our services, are taking new referrals in our systems. We first had to serve our own, but we will take new referrals and new volunteers. And we're still doing protocol though. We're still doing query checks. We're still doing training. We're still doing reference checks for volunteers. And we're trying to talk to the elder. We will try and match people with somebody near where they live because we're hoping that when people are able to visit again, that they will be able to, and we want to match people so that they can have that continuity of friendship. Although we might make some exceptions. We know that some of the elder referrals we're getting now are just going to be during the time of COVID, but others will continue for the long haul. And as I said, I'm hoping that maybe the way for those of you who may be concerned that some of your residents are really isolated and lonely and getting depressed, that I think it's the way that you talk about do they want a new friend might be helpful, letting them know that we don't want people to feel like there's something wrong with them, you know, or anything, but just talking about how we're all feeling really kind of isolated right now, and that there's a lot of people who want to connect with one another, and would they be interested in connecting with another person? So it's not like, oh, are you lonely and isolated? I think it's the way you ask and talk to them that maybe some people would say yes, who might not otherwise, just because they feel a stigma or feel badly about it. We again mostly want to serve, you know, high priority is low and moderate income people, but we don't ask social security numbers. We don't ask income. We ask things that are important to making a good match. And our focus is on people who have little or no other social connections, but certainly we serve people who have families, but they still want to have their friend of choice there. We are doing some of the other things that we are doing besides phone calls is obviously internet matches for those who have, you know, a computer or a laptop or a tablet, and making e-matches, or that's how some of our matches are connecting with one another. Cards, we have some people who are sending and who have children or nieces and nephews and just otherwise who are making these beautiful, really heartfelt, really nice cards, like that are individualized, that we're sending to some of our elders in places where it feels safe to get a card. And I've gotten really good feedback on that. It's amazing how when you have this visual card, you get in the mail and you hold on to it and you have it by your bedside. Oh, look at this. And you know, you can look at it and it's pretty and it's colorful and it has a really lovely message on it. Also pen pals, back to old fashioned pen pals. We can be doing that as well. We've developed a YouTube channel. We're gonna be putting like some of our Music Works programs on there, our own videos. People can go there to that, and some education programs that we're developing And we will do some errands, although there's a lot of other programs throughout the city that are doing errands for people. So we're mostly doing it for our own matches and not necessary for others because we don't have that capacity. And we're also, our medical escort program is open for, you know, urgent needs. Most doctors are canceling them still, but if there's an urgent need, our medical escort coordinator and one of our volunteers is still taking people to medical appointments. And there are, you know, resources throughout, you know, outside of, I do think we're unique in Massachusetts in many ways in terms of the combination of programs that we provide. But, you know, all of you probably know what's around you in your neighborhoods. If you're not able to refer to us, whether it's finding out through the Councils of Aging or through the AAA, what's near you, sometimes some of the faith communities are doing stuff, although often they'll reach out mostly to their own members, but you can find out if, you know, somebody in your building actually belonged or used to belong to a church or a synagogue or a mosque or something, and maybe, and let them know that you're calling because maybe somebody in their congregation, you know, might reach out to them and you can make your own connection there. And we can also, you know, maybe if you need to, we may be able to think of some other resources in your communities if you're not in ours. We just had our walk to end elder isolation this past Sunday. It's probably the only walk in the country that is a walk to end elder isolation to just highlight the whole issue of elder isolation and loneliness. There's a lot more I could say, but I want to make sure that, two other things. Our focus is on individual work, but we do some group programs too. We're recognizing how many people do not have internet access and what an impact that is, and division between those who do in terms of being able to do lifelong learning and just connecting with people if they have it. And we're working to get tablets in more people's hands and learning about how to do that. For many people, that's just way too difficult not to be sitting next to somebody to actually be teaching somebody if they've never used a smart device. And for other people, it is doable. So we're gonna be learning, because it's not just about now. The whole focus of Friendship Works is that some of the people were isolated before COVID-19. Other people are new to social isolation. Friendship Works will be here after COVID-19 is over for the people who, you know, are in our catchment area. This is work we do, you know, forever and ever and ever, as long as the agency is there. This is our work. But again, maybe people are willing to say, I really would like somebody now, even though they might have wanted that before. We have a focus on low vision, of older adults with low vision. So we serve people 60 and older, but 55 and older if they have low vision or hearing impairment. And we also have a bit of a focus on LGBTQ elders who often will self-isolate or don't have family and friends. So those are two areas we chose to focus on because they're areas where people will self-isolate it, but they don't need to. And if they may need to adapt their lives a little bit, but we want them to know that we can be there for them. So I think I'll end, you know, the difference that a friendship makes is amazing. I mean, it's not the end all and be all, but it is huge when we know that somebody's reaching out, that we have somebody to talk to. All of a sudden you listen to the news differently. If you watch a movie, if you read a book, you have somebody to talk about it with. It changes your week. You know what day. I think it's not enough. We know it's just, you know, an hour or two a week, but it changes it. Oh, I know when Wednesday is, instead of all the days mixing up, because you have something to look forward to. So it really changes. Also, like if you want food, you know somebody, if you need something, you know that there's somebody there who cares about you, who will help you troubleshoot. They'll share your joys and your sorrows, and that, and also they'll help you, you know, make a phone call if there's a difficult phone call to make for services to EOEA or somewhere else and you're intimidated. Maybe your volunteer can help with that, or your friend, I would say. So we all know how important friendship is in our lives and how friends have saved us in certain moments of our lives to have somebody to talk to. And also we really want the older adult to know that they're sharing their lives with the volunteer is a gift that they're giving, because people are volunteering want this connection too. So they're really giving a gift to others, and we want them to feel that and to know that. I don't know how this, Emily, is going in terms of the questions are after Caitlin or before, but I'm willing, and I could talk more, but I want to give enough time for any questions folks have.
Well, you did perfect, Janet, because most of the questions that were coming in, you then answered right away. So there's only kind of one or two questions I'm going to ask you now, and then we'll switch to Caitlin, and then we'll have questions at the end, too. Do you have an idea about how many people don't have technology tools or internet? Because I think that's something we're hearing, and we don't really know how what's the magnitude. Do you have a sense for the people that you work with?
For the people we work, it's the vast majority of them do not. It's really kind of shocking. The vast majority of people do not. And I think it's not as much age as it is income. Because, I mean, I have a lot of friends who are in their 70s and 80s and 90s and 100, and they have the internet because they're middle income and, you know, more. It's not just about having the tablet and the computer or phone. It's about paying that monthly fee, also the intimidation of, you know, kind of even signing up for that, as well as somebody to teach you. You know, do you have somebody else? It's also, you know, what we're learning, and we're going to be doing a lot of work on this during the summer, because this is not just about a COVID-19 issue. I mean, it's made it worse, but it's ongoing issue. You know, it's throughout our lives. We know what a difference it can make, but it can be worse to have a tablet. And then if it stops working, and the frustration and anxiety people have and thinking you're stupid, or I don't know how to work it and how to fix it. So sometimes people just don't want to do it because it's just not worth the frustration. I mean, I know I feel that way sometimes, but I know people who I can talk to and say, help me, you know, but if you don't have that person, and if they're not in the room with you. So this is something we, and I'm sure there are other people too, but we're going to be working with some other folks to really look at what's the best device. You know, maybe getting some that are really simple, just push this button just to be able to maybe get to YouTube, or maybe just get to Zoom, or, you know, what is it that people most want to use? And then the ones who can maybe handle something bigger. But I would say that the majority of the people we serve, we've looked at it, because that's what we did as soon as COVID started, was do phone calls, who has what, so we could figure out what to do. And the vast majority of them do not have a device.
Okay, that's good to know. All right, I'm gonna switch to Caitlin. I know there's some other questions that came in. I'm gonna ask Janet a favor, which is, somebody asked in the chat room, how do people volunteer? So maybe while Caitlin's talking, you could type in the chat how, if somebody wanted to volunteer, or let Allison know, and we can put that in. But I'm gonna switch, I'm switching presenters now, same topic, to Caitlin Coyle. And Caitlin is with the UMass Boston Gerontology Institute, where they're really looking, she's working with Janet and working with other stakeholders like AARP, and they've developed a task force on loneliness and building community. And they're really looking at this issue across the state. They're looking at programs like Friendship Works. And I think there's an opportunity for you all to give them input and get involved. So I'm gonna turn it over to Caitlin. Caitlin, you are muted right now, so you gotta unmute yourself.
All right. Thank you, Emily.
Perfect.
All right. So as Emily said, my name is Caitlin Coyle. I'm a research professor at UMass Boston in the Gerontology Institute. I actually got my start on this topic as a friendly visitor, much like Janet just described, for many years while in graduate school. And I wanted to talk a little bit today about some of the work that my colleagues and I have been doing pre-COVID. And how it's become even more important and shifted a little bit since we've all been living in the COVID-19 pandemic. So one of the things that I have been frustrated with as an academic, as a researcher, is that I feel as though we've really documented the negative impact of isolation and loneliness. We have a lot of evidence that tells us how bad it is for people's health, and all of the mechanisms, you know, that it affects people's health. But yet where I think we fall down is really coming up with what they call evidence-based solutions to this issue, to the issues of loneliness and isolation. And I think part of the problem of that, part of the reason for that problem is really that if you've met one socially isolated person, you've met one socially isolated person. That this experience of isolation and loneliness is extremely diverse in its onset, in its causes, and in its experience. And so you can imagine, and I'm sure you all have many examples of the residents that you work with who experience isolation and loneliness for different reasons. and it manifests itself in different ways, and how people feel about it, whether they're okay with being isolated or whether it's a discomforting feeling for them, that it is a really diverse experience. And so as we think about, it's really important that experience and match it with the diversity of interventions and programs that might be able to alleviate the issue or prevent it in an ideal situation. So I say all of that because that really is the impetus for some of the work that the task force is working on. So the task force is called the Task Force to End Loneliness and Build Community. And it is effectively co-organized by myself and Sandra Harris, who is the volunteer president of AARP Massachusetts. And we pulled together stakeholders from across Massachusetts, including Janet and others, public health representatives, mental health representatives, policy maker representatives, academics like myself, really pulling people together to address this issue. And like I said, this work started before COVID, but really what we set out to do is, our large term goal is to establish an action plan for how the state can respond to this issue. But for the first step that we're taking, and the step where we could really use input from all of you, and I'm hoping that some of you can join us, is that we have convened a series of what we're calling community conversations in various regions of Massachusetts. These originally were planned to be done in person, although now they will be conducted via Zoom. And the purpose of this is to bring people together just like you, people who work on the front lines, who work with older adults in the community, who understand both the problem as well as the barriers to intervention and barriers to getting programs off the ground. And we want to bring people together to have a real interactive conversation about what is working in your community, what's not working in your community, who is it working for, who is it not working for, what are the ways, what are your ideas, what are your solutions, what are the things that you wish if you had all the resources in the world that you might be able to do to improve the situation of isolation and loneliness, and also to get people to think, outside the box a little bit. I think one of the issues with these topics is that there is stigma associated with it. There's stigma associated with isolation and with loneliness. Those are not terms that people readily want to identify with. And so thinking about interventions that come in the form of housing supports or transportation or volunteering, things that we know also have byproduct of social connection, I think is going to be really important. And so these events are starting next week. They're happening, we're doing one out in the Berkshires. We're doing one out on the Cape. And I say this, they're all happening via Zoom, but the folks who are being invited, and we're trying to kind of have these regional conversations, understanding that what might work on the Cape is going to be different than what works in Boston. We've got the Ken and the Berkshires. We're doing one in the Metro Boston area as well, and then one up on the North Shore in the Lowell Lawrence area. And the idea is that these interactive conversations, the content of these interactive conversations will be compiled into a tool, to a community resource where organizations like yours, people that work with you, can go to this resource and say, I'm an urban housing development in this particular neighborhood. What are some of the ideas that would work here for me? Or I'm really interested, we have a really big non-English speaking population, and I want to think about what are some of the things that would work for us. So really trying to help people navigate the diversity of the isolation experience and identify exciting solutions for those populations. So that's sort of our first step. But I want to be clear that it's the first of hopefully many. I think the other pieces that our task force is working on is really a public awareness campaign of these issues, trying to really chip away at the stigma of isolation and loneliness. We also have a subgroup that's working specifically on intergenerational programming. And the idea is that AARP Massachusetts and we at UMass Boston Gerontology have really committed to tackling this issue and to continue to look at it from all different angles and really try to be the bridge between the problem and the solution. And so I'm hoping that folks, I know somebody, I think, I'll be sure you could have the information for those four events so that perhaps some of you could join or some members of your staff could join. I think we'd really love to hear from you about what are the issues facing your populations, what are the things you're trying, what are the things that are working and not working, as well as to connect with others who are doing this work and who are facing similar experiences. I wanted to also mention a couple of just sort of suggestions, some things that have kind of come to my thought, you know, things I've thought about as we face COVID and as we try to think about how do we promote social connection with the lack of sort of in-person contact. The things that I have seen and have talked about with other folks is particularly I was having a conversation the other day with some of my colleagues and they're talking about working with non-English speaking older adults and really thinking about some of the apps that are particularly popular. So in the Chinese American community, it's called WeChat. And I think some of the Latino folks, they use sort of WhatsApp and really how the digital divide, even within those communities, a lot of them have those apps so that they can communicate with family and friends and that those things can actually be pretty effective and used via phone. The other piece was, we have a concept that's been in sort of the senior center community called the senior centers without walls. And I think it really could be applicable in this situation in terms of hosting phone programming. So you can imagine maybe bringing in a speaker and having people join by phone. The person could give a little bit of a presentation and folks could do a question and answer, or it could be a current events topic that people could discuss, sort of putting some structure around a phone conversation. Giving people sort of a reason to gather by phone. It could be to share poetry or writing samples, that kind of thing. But really thinking about the programming aspect of phone contact and thinking about it beyond just sort of a, hey, how are you? But really trying to provide some enriching interaction in that mechanism. And, or, you know, you could also do sort of support group type of models. You know, get people together to talk about the things that they're going through and perhaps offer some peer support to one another. I also wanted to mention, and I think Janet touched on it briefly, which is, you know, what are the ways that the residents that you work with, how can they volunteer themselves? How can they be of service to their neighbors, to their neighborhoods, to their communities? Maybe it's making cards, maybe it's picking up the phone and calling some folks. You know, whatever it might be. But I think especially when we think about the stigma of isolation and also just what we know about older adults in general, they want to be of service. They want to contribute. They have lots to contribute. And so figuring out ways, I think sometimes that can be a lure. You know, one of the issues we talk about in isolation is that there is a population of people who just simply don't want to be, they don't want to participate. They're not going to come out of their apartments, they're not necessarily going to join a phone program, but it sometimes I think if we put the onus on, instead of them needing something from someone, that it's really about them providing and contributing to their community, that can be powerful. And so I would just encourage you guys to think, you know, I'm sure you already have, but those are just some tidbits, some ideas that I wanted to share. And I also wanted to share, you know, those four upcoming community conversations and encourage you all to participate because we could really use your expertise and your voice. So I'm going to stop there and we can do some questions.
That was great, Caitlin. And for folks on the phone, we did put the link to the regional forums in the chat room. And somebody asked specifically about a South Coast Bristol County area. There is one on May 27th from 10 to 12 for that area. So, you know, let me just ask a logistics question, Caitlin. If for scheduling reasons, I live on the Cape, but can't go to the Cape one, and really now it's all virtual, can I go to a different one?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
We kept the regional structure because it was already in place. And also, as I said, thinking about people who work in, you know, regionally similar areas, but certainly join us for any of them. You can come to all four if you really would like, or you just want to hear what's going on. You're welcome to do that.
Great. Now, there's been a lot of links and things in the chat today, so I'm going to make sure that all gets out to the listserv with the recording after this. I also just want to check, before we launch into the questions that I have and that are in the chat room, Sarah or Lynn from Friendship Works, have you guys received any questions in the email? I'm seeing no's. Oh, can't hear you if you're talking.
No questions so far.
Okay, thanks, Sarah. All right, so we did have a few questions that came in that I'm going to try and go from one to the other and see who makes sense. But I think, Janet, this one's for you. If the resident has a mental illness, how do you deal with that with matching for a volunteer? You know, how does it affect going to somebody's house or interacting with them? Is that something that you deal with? We would imagine there are also some people who might have dementia or cognitive impairment. How does that play a role in matching the volunteers?
Okay, great question, and I appreciate it. So there are some parameters about who to refer. Anybody who is in full onslaught dementia, we do not take as referrals for our program. We think it's very important, but there's other programs where a lot of it is our and the same thing with mental illness. It depends on the mental illness. There are many people we serve who have mental illness, but our volunteers are people like you and me. They're like neighbors. We, you know, if there's a specific issue, a specific physical or mental or emotional issue, we try and, you know, match the volunteer appropriately. But if it feels unsafe, if it's going to be unsafe for the volunteer or there's not going to be able to be a real interaction, then, you know, we would rather refer them out to someplace else. If somebody's on medications and they can really have a one-on, you know, they can be a friend, they can be a relationship, they can receive, you know, kind of a visit, then we will do that. We have had, you know, people who have hoarded, we've had, you know, people with depression, we've had people who have been schizophrenic, we've done things like that. So we want to know about that. We want the truth, you know, in the referral. It's really important that you tell us and that we will determine whether we can find a volunteer. It might take us longer to find the right volunteer. And if it's a danger to the volunteer, we will not do it, you know, we will not match them. So I don't know if that answers it enough. We'd want to know what the mental illness is, how severe it is. If it's very severe and needs professional help and they're not getting that professional help, then we would not match them. Same thing if somebody's really using drug or actively using drug or alcohol, you know, we will not match them. Again, we train volunteers, but we don't train them, you know, they're not trained mental health workers, and then they might need somebody else.
And are there situations where you have a volunteer who is concerned about one of the people they're volunteering with? Is there some protocol with how they get that person access or what they would do if they...
Yeah, all the volunteers know they can call their, so the volunteers are, as the elder is matched with one of our friendly visiting coordinators or medical escort coordinator, and so we have information hopefully about who referred them, about who their next of kin is or their doctor. We do take that in case there was an emergency situation. We'll go back to the referral agency, you know, if it's a ASAP or, you know, something like that, and say, you know, make sure the case manager or that, you know, will troubleshoot with you. We know obviously the coordinators on our staff know what resources are out there. So even though we are not case managers, there are times we have to act as case managers, particularly. That's why we don't really like to take self-referrals, but we do. We definitely take self-referrals. We also get referrals from, you know, the daughter in California who's really concerned about her mom who lives in Boston, or a child who just brought her parents here and they have no friends except for the family and they really want them to have their own friendship network. So we get referrals from all sorts of ways, but then we want the volunteer to let our coordinator know, our staff member, and our staff member will then look at like what other resources and try and refer them, or they might get involved in the case depending on what it is, and then talk to the supervisor. Julie Berkeley is our director of volunteers. She's been with us for 6 months. She's wonderful, and she will then work with our staff also on figuring out what support they need.
All right, the questions are coming in fast and furious right now. I think I have for Janet, approximately how long does it take to find a match for the elder?
So these days it's actually taking a little less long because it's by phone and we're not able to go into, we used to, you know, when we get a referral, we would actually go visit the older adult in their home to see what their environment's like to get so that the our staff member could also really get a good gut sense of the elder in their home environment, what's it like, and the same thing with the volunteers. So not having the travel time and setting up appointments like that. It depends on, again, where the person lives, how picky they are about who they have, if they have certain prejudices, or I have to have somebody who knows how to, you know, do embroidery or something like that. That might take a little longer, although we will still try and match them, their language things, but anywhere, probably about 2 to 4 weeks these days, that it takes, it used to take a little bit longer than that. And it might just be that we have somebody right there available, but it might take a little longer again, depending. But about 2 to 4
And weeks. Have you ever thought about a model that sort of adopted a whole building that you kind of, you know, what sometimes in the housing world we call a place-based strategy, where you sort of, okay, this whole building, we're going to try something with everybody here.
I would love to try that with somebody. If somebody's interested, we'll figure out what that really means. We have not done that with elder housing. We've done it like with assisted living or nursing home, which is with our group program. So if we have a pet volunteer, they might go to different rooms in the same, you know, nursing home or assisted living with their dog or cat. And so they'll, you know, it's one person assigned to the building to visit either to a group program or to go, you know, room to room, you know, for, and spend it shorter periods of time, because it tends to be people in nursing homes, you know, have shorter, generally as a generalization of can't sustain an hour long, you know, conversation as a generalization. So we can match a volunteer with more than one person. In elder housing, if we do a group program, we will, but in terms of visitation, we have not done that. So that would take some brainstorming, thinking, what do we mean by that? What's the model that would be? And I'm always open to looking at new things. Yeah.
I'm sure some folks on this call, their wheels are turning now. I want to turn it over to the people on the call, or I've been reading the chat, but does anybody want to unmute themselves and ask a question of either of the presenters or anybody else? Okay, well, if you do, you can raise your hand or you can just start talking, I guess. I think I loved the idea, Caitlin, of people giving back, right? Because I think although all of us right now, probably everybody on the phone would say we're lonely and socially isolated, you know, when it comes down to it, there is, and some of the comments have been about how do you engage people? And I have seen, at least in my community, a lot of people who say, oh, well, I'll make masks or face coverings because I can sit at home and do that and feel like I'm giving back. Should these folks who are on the phone, who are on the front lines, they're trying to think creatively about how to engage people. But I think there's also a little bit of a concern of, you know, should I be screening in some way for social isolation? How do I know? Like, if they're going to refer people to Friendship Works, do they do it just based on the people who seem interested? Or what do you do with the people, as you mentioned, Caitlin, who are hard to engage and we're worried about? And these folks on the phone, you know, see them every day or talk to them, and they're kind of concerned, not because there's a severe mental illness, but because there's a trauma that we're all having right now and it's playing out differently for different folks. Do you have any thoughts or suggestions about, you know, how to know, I guess I'm sort of like, should they be screening for social isolation, and what would that even look like? And I don't, this for either of you, whoever, or anybody else on the phone.
I can talk a little bit about, I mean, Janet probably has some knowledge about the screening piece. I mean, there are certainly, you know, research-based tools that people use to sort of try to measure isolation and loneliness. I would argue that none of them are very good. And certainly a lot of them don't sort of take into account the qualitative aspect of the experience. You know, it's like real cut and dry, like, are you lonely? Are you, you know, sort of, it's not, I would just say they're not that great. But I, as far as the hard to reach population and the folks who are maybe a little bit resistant to participating in sort of social events and things like that, I think the two things to keep in mind, one is, you know, just really, you know, thinking about the person first and thinking, you know, maybe they're not going to join a writing group or a, a card game or something like that, but to be able to figure out a way to build some kind of relationship with them where they at least understand and know that if they needed something, that they have someone to contact. So whether that's, you know, a service coordinator or a neighbor or someone else, but really just trying to get to know that person on some level, so that, and to be able to say, hey, if you ever needed anything, you know, you could call so-and-so for that. And to really just sort of, you know, leave it at that and to make sure your expectations are, you know, kind of adjusted accordingly to that. And I would say that the other piece that's really important, and I talk about this in my, when I do work with municipalities, is that, we may not be able to ever alleviate their lifetime of loneliness, you know, their whatever brought them to this particular place in life. But what we can do is know they are there and to think and to plan and to think through, you know, if a crisis did occur, if something, whether it's a public health crisis like the one we're in now, whether it's a weather situation or whether it's simply a personal crisis that that person goes into, to have some plan in place of how to support them. So whether that's, you know, trying to identify some kind of emergency contact system, or to simply know that they are there. So to say, okay, we know there's this situation going on and we've got these 10 residents who we know need to have somebody go directly to their door as opposed to responding to a phone call or something like that. So anyway, that's, Janet, I don't know how you feel about the screening.
Well, I think that, I think most people here know that there's a difference between social isolation and loneliness. Some people have both, some another. So some people have been lonely, you know, and maybe it's you, maybe it's friends, maybe who have been lonely their whole life. And sometimes we're loneliest in a crowd of people we can't connect to. And some people, that's an emotional place. And sometimes loneliness comes out of social isolation and out of loss, but sometimes it's its own emotional beast that is there. Social isolation really is when you don't have regular contacts. It's like, you know, how many contacts do you have? How many people actually talk to you? Where do you do? So they both are dangerous to your health and your well-being, and many people experience both, but sometimes you can be socially isolated and not be lonely at all because you're kind of very self-content. Or I do believe that everybody wants a friend. I mean, 99% there are people who really want to be hermits, but I don't think that everybody wants to be in a group or wants a gaggle of people they might not have liked it when they were young. They're not going to like it when they're older. And like, you know, like, please don't, you know, I'd rather go to the dentist than be with a group of people I don't know. But I think that we are pack animals. Human beings are pack animals, and we need somebody to depend on that knows that we're there, that we can care about. I have heard some of our older adults say, wow, this is the first time in a long time I've had somebody to care about. That just broke my heart a few years ago. Even though I've been doing this for a long time, I hadn't really thought about like how, like for us, sometimes it's more important that we have somebody to love and care about and think about than it is even for us to be cared about, right? So giving somebody that opportunity. So I think that in approaching somebody, and I think people in housing probably know your residents, depending on your position, better than most. Like who, like I, what are their interests? Who were they before, you know, who really are they? You know, they're just not an older person. Like, what was their career, if you want, before? Or do they love music? Did they used to play an instrument? Were they a chess champion? Did they, and if you can get to know them, then you can kind of speak to that person directly. Hey, I know, you know, you told me once that you love to play chess. What if I could find you to somebody to play chess with every week, right? Or I know you used to play the violin. Would you like to kind of get online and listen to music, you know, with somebody else, or even play your violin with somebody else? We can find you another musician. I know that there's somebody out there, and let them know that there's somebody else out there who might like to be paired with them. So again, getting to the point of like that they still are of value, that they have something to offer to this relationship, and that also they can maybe, I like to say that you're never too old to have a new friend, you know, and you're never too young to have an older friend. And we, most of our volunteers, they're of all ages, but we have a lot in their 20s and 30s and 40s. And they're, you know, looking for that relationship with an older adult. You can tell them, you know what, there's some young people in the city who don't have a grandparent or parent nearby, and they would really love to, you know, speak to somebody and have a relationship. Would you be willing to be that person? You know, I know that you don't have your own family nearby. Would you be willing to offer that? You know, be on a phone once a week or have a visit from somebody who would enjoy your company because you have something to offer to them. So sometimes you turn it around. That's not always possible. And we always tell our volunteers to err on the side of listening. and of being there for somebody else, but also to share their life, you know, with the elder themselves. So the elder has an opportunity to share their wisdom and their experiences with them. So I just think the more you know that person, the closer you can get them to open up if they really want somebody or not in their life, a new person.
I think that's really helpful. We do have Judith, who's been has her hand up, I think, to ask a question, and she put some questions in the chat room. So Judith Thermidor, do you want to unmute yourself and ask a question?
Yes,
tell us where you're from, Judith. Yes, where are you from?
I'm in Rosendale.
Okay.
Yes. So, you know, the community around Boston, most of them, the unique social connectedness, so the unique social work, it's just go to church. And now it's very, very tough for them. They can't go to church. They can't receive visits, you know, from children. And most of them, they are not non-English speaker. You know, meditation, they don't get it. You know, when you try, you know, they have the culture, you know, and pray in their ways. So I know it's a really violation. It's housing rules. We can't provide services regarding faith or religion. And now I feel stuck with the residents, how we can be flexible regarding this situation.
Thanks, Judith. That's a great question. So it's really about faith and religion, and how do you keep that going in COVID-19? Janet, you look like you want to say something.
Yeah, I would say that we started out as an interfaith coalition, and you know, we're not a faith-based program or anything, but it was just, we started out, and I won't go into it because we don't have time, you know, started out with mainline Protestant, Catholic, and Jewish congregations and healthcare organizations and bridging some of that gap. And the reason is because as you get older, for the older population that's there now, I don't know if that'll be, you know, in the next generation, but they tend to go to their church or synagogue more often than younger people. And it's important to them. And also at the end of life, as we get older, we start to ask those questions. Why am I here? What am I for? Or it's your, sometimes going to funerals is your social life these days. I remember my mom saying that, you know, but unfortunately. So we will match. First of all, I will say that we don't take a stand on religion, except we have always been open to it. And we've always trained our volunteers. We are not allowed to evangelize. When we will not bring it up, won't have the volunteers. But if an elder would like to speak about their faith or wants the Bible read to them, that's what they're like. Just like if somebody loves a dog or somebody, that's really what a need they have. We will find a volunteer for them who may share that faith or doesn't share but is interested in listening and learning. We are a field placement for Harvard Divinity School, have always been since the beginning. So we work with congregations of all faiths, and we also deal with this whole issue of spirituality and late life questions. And so that's something. There also are many churches who are doing online for people, obviously, who have services. And if the elder knows about that or not, if they have a computer, they can plug in. Most congregations do have services online, or they can find another church or synagogue or something that does. So that's another way to do it. And we'd be willing to take a referral in that.
And I do think one of the things that was included in the governor's opening was the houses of worship. So we're going to have to see how that plays out and how you maintain social distancing. But I think that they're thinking about that. So I'm conscious of the time. I want to thank Janet and Caitlin for all this. I want to remind people to fill out our survey to let us know if you know what topics and how often you want to keep having these calls. To send questions or ideas or thoughts or positive cases to seniorhousingcovid19@mass.gov. To next week, participate in the regional forums that Caitlin is sponsoring on loneliness with AARP. And to stay safe and keep on fighting the good fight. So thank you, everybody, and take care. And we'll see you soon. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.